Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In 1999, Representative Michael Capuano was elected to represent the 8th Congressional District after former Congressman Joseph Kennedy decided not to seek re-election. 11 years and 6 terms later, Michael Capuano tried to fill a seat held by a different Kennedy, Joe's uncle, the late Senator Ted Kennedy. He lost the Democratic nomination to Attorney General Martha Coakley, but in his concession speech, Capuano struck a conciliatory tone not often heard from a lawmaker known for his deep passion.
I want to congratulate the next Senator of Massachusetts, Martha Coakley. She ran a good campaign, and it was a good, clean campaign. And I want to congratulate her. I'm going to be there to make her the next senator between now and January. And when she gets elected, we're going to work hard to make sure she's successful.
Well, she wasn't successful, as we know. But Michael Capuano himself went back to the House and back to work on financial reform, campaign finance, and the big lesson he took away from his failed election bid to the Senate, jobs. Jobs and jobs. So, 8th District voters, Michael Capuano is running unopposed for his House seat this year. Is that a good thing or not? What issues do you wish he'd turn that famous fighting spirit towards? And what's your question for the representative? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And it's my pleasure now to welcome Congressman Michael Capuano to Radio Boston. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Well, Congressman, let me just start by asking you, in January, when you went back to the House after your Senate bid, the Huffington Post reports that you told the Democratic caucus that you learned one big lesson from that January race. And what was that lesson that you told your Democratic colleagues?
Well, I told them that people were angry and upset, mostly about the economy. And if we don't finish health care one way or the other, up or down, and turn our attention to jobs, that I thought every incumbent would be in a difficult situation.
Huffington Post reports that you used a little more spicy language, which I do believe is radio safe. But you can imagine what Congressman Capuano might have told other Democrats running.
That's right.
For open seats. So what's your, or not open seats, but running for re-election again. So what's your advice to, you've got many other of the delegation here in Massachusetts, Democrats who have opponents running against them. You do not. So what's your advice for them to hold on to their seats?
Well, I think they'll all be in good shape. I mean, some have tougher races than others. I think they'll all be reelected. I think that most every incumbent knows, not just from my election and from the Scott Brown, Martha Coakley race, but we've now had Bob Bennett in Utah. We've had others across the country that have had difficult times. It's not a good year to be an incumbent. I think almost every incumbent gets that. And I think that most of them are paying more attention to the day-to-day routines at home, probably going to more events and speaking up a little bit more than they might otherwise be. And I think that message is pretty much accepted loud and clear in Washington. I hope that Washington gets the rest of the message. I mean, that's part of it, certainly. But the other part, in my opinion, is still we still have not done what I would like to see done relative to jobs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you about that, because as you know, in Massachusetts, unemployment still hovers above 9%.
Right.
And just a couple, just a week or so ago, the House took a vote on extending unemployment benefits, which would have or does have an effect on some 100,000 Massachusetts residents. That vote passed the House, but you actually voted against it.
Yeah, we've extended health and unemployment benefits now a couple of times, and we will do it again. And I clearly 1,000% supported. But that bill also took out extension of COBRA covering for those unemployed people. And for anyone who's unemployed, they always tell me, obviously they want the unemployment check, but they need the health coverage. You can't have one without the other. That bill also took out, I remember the total billions, but for the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, it was $700 million in what's called FMAP. It's a Medicare payment for the state, which means that if we don't cover that, the state will have to have massive cuts to its budget, and that'll fall down to cities and towns as well. Those two items alone were enough for me to say this bill is not what it should be. And then on top of it, there's additional language relative to transportation that, as I read it, could cost the Commonwealth of Massachusetts about $140, $150 million a year forever. Mm-hmm. I'm not 100% sure that I read it correctly. I asked for reassurances from some people. I did not get them. You add those three things together, and that bill was not sufficient. It wasn't the unemployment coverage. I totally support it. I've voted for it in the past, and I'll vote for it in the future. But to sit there and pretend that we can take people who are unemployed and say to them, don't worry about it. We're not going to cover you on health care. We're not going to allow yourself to buy your own health care, I think that's unconscionable, and I just think that it was important to be heard on that.
Well, politically speaking, were you in a position where you felt fairly confident that unemployment extension had the votes to pass, so safely vote no
on
these issues?
No, not
issues?
Necessarily. I think it was important in some levels. I think this bill needs to be changed. And by the way, the Senate had already gone home by the time we voted on that bill, and we all knew that the Senate wasn't coming back until after the break anyway, so that the unemployment extension was going to die no matter what. It's withering the vine right now. They're going to have to do it when they get home. I find it almost impossible to believe that the Senate will simply take the bill we put through and say yes to it. They might. But if they don't, it's going to have to come back to the House anyway.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you had some questions about the impact that transportation aspects of that bill would have on Massachusetts. I want to ask you a little bit more about that later, because you do sit on the House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee and also on the House Committee on Financial Services. So that's obviously a very important committee in this day and
yeah, we've been
age.
Busy.
Here we've got a little bit of tape of you speaking to a group of bankers in February of last year.
Basically, you come to us today telling us we're sorry, we didn't mean it, we won't do it again. Trust us. Well, I have some people in my constituency that actually robbed some of your banks, and they say the same thing.
That's Michael Capuano, congressman from the 8th District of Massachusetts. And Representative Capuano, I mean, many people felt that same and still continue to feel
right.
That same outrage. And in December, you were one of, I believe, the 223 or so Democrats to approve a bill calling for much tighter financial regulation, of course.
Long overdue. That bill is one of the few bills I think needs to be done between now and the end of the session. There's a couple other things we need to do, but that has to be done as well. And that has to be done not necessarily for the short term. We need to do it that way, but we have to do it for the long term. Otherwise, we'll be back in the exact same situation again very quickly.
Except the problem now is that there's the House version and the Senate version, and they've got to go through committee. And so, I mean, are there any key aspects of the House bill you believe that maybe actually get lost in the committee process?
That I don't know, but it's one of the few times, certainly since I've been there, I can't think of any other time, and few times I've ever heard of a bill getting stronger that went to the Senate. That's usually the place where good ideas go to die or to get watered down, and this time they did a great job on it. But I think that's because the public has finally caught up with the issue, and the public is demanding us to do something on Wall Street and banks. So that I think that what comes out of the conference committee will be a bill that will be a good bill. I believe that, and I think it's going to be something that that we can all support. Obviously, there's no guarantees till we see it, but I feel pretty good about this conference committee.
You do. So you're not worried that there's that part of the bill which states that banks that have derivatives units would have to spin that off into a separate unit, that might actually get removed?
Like anything else, I mean, there's the individual provisions that I'm very concerned with, several of these provisions. But I think overall, I think that provision will stay, or something along those lines will stay. I've been focusing on derivatives. And I've also been focusing on credit rating agencies. I think they've been at the center of this whole fiscal mess, and they've kind of gone unscathed. And we have to get them under control as well. But I think there's several aspects. Do I think that some things might get shaved off? Sure, that's possible. But overall, I'm really looking forward to a good bill coming out of this.
Okay. Well, you can join us if you have a question for Congressman Michael Capuano. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Let's take a quick call. Bob's calling from Ashby. Welcome to Radio Boston, Bob.
Hi, Magna. Great show. Congressman Capuano, I love your politics.
Thanks, Bob.
A total supporter of your campaign until the debate where you and Steve Taliuka get into it, and it turned me off. And my only comment would be, you would have been hugely better candidate to face Scott Brown, but I couldn't get through the primary with with that little interchange.
Sorry to interrupt you, but for people who may not remember, are you referring to the debate where the congressman and Mr. Pagliuca had their differences over a provision in the health care bill that would have restricted federal funding for abortion? Is that what you were talking about?
Yes.
Okay.
And it sort of degenerated a little bit. It seemed a little too strong to me. That you were almost getting into it. I don't know personally. It just seemed too strong somehow. It was so long ago, but I remember at the time, it really disappointed me. And
so did the representative lose your vote on that day over a style issue, Bob, or was it really a substantive issue?
It was. I think it was a style issue. I'm half Italian, and it reminded me a couple of guys in the neighborhood getting into it.
That's what I am, Bob.
Bob, just stay.
I totally relate.
Bob, stick with us for a second. I want to let the representative respond. We'll get you back in here. So stick with us. Hold on.
Well, I understand. I didn't really like the exchange myself, but at the same time, I don't let anybody speak on my behalf, especially in the middle of debate. I actually think the moderator should have jumped in, but they didn't. And you're right, I am one of the guys on the corner. And if somebody tries to put words in my mouth, I'm going to fight back. I understand fully well that some people prefer senators to be a little bit more polished and to look a little bit more senatorial. And I actually argue that's part of the problem. I don't think Abe Lincoln could get elected in today's world. He doesn't look good enough. But at the same time, if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. And I appreciate you being honest about it, Bob. But others have called me on some of my stylistic issues as well. But I've always thought to myself, you know what? I came in being who I am. I hope and pray I go out being who I am. And if that means I win or lose elections on the basis of that, so be it. I think that the world would be better off if we had more people in elective office who were comfortable with who they are and just let it go. And that doesn't mean everybody's going to like it. It just means that I prefer a little bit more openness and honesty in the political world than we actually end up getting.
Hey, Bob, let me ask you a quick question about that. Because, you know, when the congressman ran for the Senate seat late last year and early this year, his colleague, Congressman Barney Frank, actually said, you know, that he kind of likes Mr. Capuano's aggression, saying that, and this is Barney Frank's vision here, that there's a lot of power with conservative thinkers and politicians and ideologues, again, Frank's word, say in the Senate. And Barney Frank said, hey, maybe liberals could use their own tough guy crusader. So what do you think about that take on the passion of Michael Capuano?
I agree with that. I agree with that. And I really think that Congressman Capuano would have been the best person to take on Barney Frank. And I can't really articulate what happened in that little part. But I'll tell you what, I hope either he or somebody like the congressman runs against Scott Brown, because I'd be out there pounding the pavement for him.
All right, thanks, Bob. Thanks so much for your call. Congressman Capuano, I mean, Bob kind of beat me to the punch here, and one of the questions I wanted to ask you, any thoughts about 2012?
Nah, not yet. I mean, I can't help but think about it, because so many people ask me about it, if you want the truth. But, yeah, you know, and I don't pretend that I don't, but thinking about it is not the same thing as planning it. I'm fully aware that there are a lot of people out there who would like to see me run. I have to be honest, though. I didn't plan on running for the Senate last year. It wasn't in the cards. It just was an opportunity that came along. I found myself in a position where I thought it was worth taking a shot. And if I find myself wanting to do it and seeing a potential path, I might do it again. But I'm not sitting here planning on it, because, first of all, we have a new senator. We have to let him make or break his own career and see how he votes. What if I agree with him on most of how he votes? We'll see. I wouldn't run against somebody just to be a senator. That's certainly not something I've ever really thought about. And, mm-hmm. But at the same time, you can't ever say never. And I kind of figure, look, I'll worry about it next year and think about it then.
Yeah, well, I mean, since we are talking about Senator Brown, just another quick question there, because back in January, after he did get elected, you told WBUR's Morning Edition host Bob Oakes, that you said, I think we need to let Mr. Brown have an opportunity to prove himself, to prove whether he's the independent he claims to be or whether he's a lockstep Republican or something in between.
Right.
So that was January. Since then, Scott Brown has actually cast some pretty decisive votes. One is on the Senate side of that financial reform bill. He voted to actually get that thing to the floor for a vote to avoid a filibuster. Then he voted for the actual bill. And then he also voted to stop debate and advance a very key jobs bill that President Obama went on to pass, a $17.5 billion bill the president signed in March. So do those two votes lead you to think maybe he is that Scott Brown Republican, that independent Republican?
The answer is I don't know yet. He also voted against health care, as he said he would, and I appreciate that. But and we'll see how he votes on other things. I mean, a couple of votes don't make or break anybody. I'm sure that anybody who wanted to pick my record apart on anything could find things they like and find things they don't like. And I appreciate that. So I think you have to let somebody paint a whole picture before you make a determination of who they are or what they are. And the problem with the Senate for any senator is they don't have a whole lot of votes over there. They tend to shut things down and go slow, and there's only a handful of votes that they ever have. They've had more lately, and I think that if you look at the full record, by the end of this year, we'll have a better idea of not just who Scott Brown is. Honestly, there are a lot of other senators that have to prove who they are and where they stand and whether they stand with the American people or not and whether they stand with the people in their state. We've already seen one senator and maybe even, I think, maybe two senators tossed out. And, you know, there are others who are in serious jeopardy. I mean, Blanche Lincoln is right now, is the last I heard, she was behind in one of the polls. And I don't think this is going to stop. I think that there is going to be a lot of new faces in Washington, and I'm happy to let people stand on their own record when the time comes. It's premature to judge anybody yet.
Let's get another call in here. Joshua's calling from Easton. Welcome to Radio Boston, Joshua.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Congressman.
Hi, Joshua. How are you?
Good. I'm an independent energy auditor, and I've been following the Homestar bill as it's wended its way through the House and now into the Senate. And I've read the Senate version, and it actually concerns me very greatly that they're creating a scenario where the only people who are going to be able to participate in the upper-tier Gold Star program are going to be HERS raters because of the IRS regulations for energy modeling in order to get the tax credit. Are you familiar with the program at all?
I'm familiar with it, but you sound a lot more familiar with it than I would. And I actually, Joshua, some of the questions you just raised, I'm sitting here thinking, I hope you send me some of this information.
And Joshua, just to clarify for those who might not know, the Homestar bill is a bill to encourage weatherization amongst homeowners. Is that correct?
That's correct. Right. It's going to require energy auditors to test the property before the weatherization is done and then afterwards as a quality control.
Right.
And there's two tiers. There's Silver Star, which allows, I believe, for grants up to $3,000, and the Gold Star, which is up to $6,000.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But they, in fact, they've created a two-tier system, whereas the House version, it pretty much left it open to everybody, independent and ResNet/HERS raters.
Joshua, let me step in here for a second. I mean, maybe you should take the representative's advice and send him the information.
Yeah, that sounds good, Joshua, because I know the House version was pretty decent. I don't pretend to be an expert on this. I haven't got yet familiar with what the Senate is doing, but you certainly raise a good question. But again, as I said earlier, the financial services bill is one of the few bills I've ever seen that went to the Senate and got better, and it sounds to me like they're back on the old track with this particular bill. But I would really appreciate if you could send my office whatever information you have on it so I can catch up to you.
Joshua, thank you so much for your call. Congressman Caggiano, if I can turn to another big piece of legislation that has gotten some attention and will likely get a lot more, and that is regarding the Disclose Act, and that for in terms of corporations spending money in elections,
right.
And that all got launched when the Supreme Court voted 5-4 in favor of Citizens United versus the FEC, and it expanded how corporations could spend their money. So you've been involved in this Disclose Act, which is basically designed to counter that. Can you briefly explain to us what the Disclose Act is?
Well, there are two bills. The Disclose Act is really just what it says. It's disclosure. I mean, what the Supreme Court said is that a corporation can now use its general fund money, its general treasury money. They couldn't do that before. They had to take donations from individuals, and they could limit the amount of money that they could use of the corporation. This means now that, for instance, BP made a profit of $6 billion in the first quarter of this year. By law, they could use all of that to be directly involved with campaigns. And they don't have to necessarily do it as BP under current law. They could form an organization, you know, Citizens for Better Government, and put $6 billion into electing or unelecting members of Congress in the House or the Senate or the presidency or local government, too. It's not just federal. It's also local. And for me, the Disclose Act is really just getting the American public. We can't stop them from spending the money. The court has said they have a right to do it. What we can do is make sure that voters know whose money it is. So when you see an ad saying Americans for Better Government say Mike Capuano stinks or Mike Capuano is great, at least at the end of the ad say funded by Exxon Corporation or funded by British Petroleum. I think voters are smart enough to figure that kind of stuff out. That's what the Disclose Act. There was another bill that I've been pushing as well, the Shareholder Protection Act, which simply says in a corporation, it is the shareholders' money. And if they choose to be involved politically, fine, but it's not the money of the CEO. And therefore, let's get shareholders to be the ones that say whether the corporation can or cannot spend money in a political campaign.
But the Disclose Act, if I can turn back to that for a second, as far as I read it, it doesn't actually, or it can't limit the amount of...
It cannot. The court was very clear. I don't have to like it, and I don't like it. I don't agree with them, but that's the way courts are on occasion. Supreme Court said that a corporation, for all intents and purposes, is the same as an individual, and they are allowed under the First Amendment to spend all their money if they want to on politically protected speech. I don't have to agree with it, but that's what they decided. So, no, we cannot limit the amount of money they can spend.
And on the shareholder side of things, I mean, you would presume that a corporation would actually funnel money into races or campaigns or issues that would, they believe, benefit the corporation. So how often do you honestly think that shareholders would vote against using money that is in the own best interest of the corporations they're part owners of?
I don't know, but I trust their judgment. If that's what they want to do, the court has now said they have a right to do that. And all I've said is, like, I have a right to spend my money in political campaigns, but I wouldn't want you spending my money on my behalf, though you seem like a wonderful person. That's all I'm saying with the shareholders' bill is to simply, it's the shareholders' money, let them make the decision. If they choose to get involved in a campaign, the court has said they have the right to do it.
Okay, last question. I want to bring it right back home here to Somerville because Assembly Square, the development there is actually getting underway. You got that started when you were mayor of Somerville. Yeah. So now I'm wondering, the Green Line extension, are you going to like tear off your shirt and actually start laying rails out there get that happening?
If necessary. We had the FTA, the Federal Transit Authority assistant, in yesterday, touring some of the Green Line stops and the Orange Line stops. I'm a firm, strong supporter of mass transit. I think that the Boston system, it needs a lot of improvement, and I'm happy to support it.
All right, residents of Somerville, you better lobby your congressman to get that Green Line extension going, because he is Representative Michael Capuano, congressman for the 8th District of Massachusetts. True pleasure to have you on Radio Boston.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Up next.
For everyone we represent, we've always talked about starting to work together as a real marriage of sorts. You know, I don't consider this a divorce. I hope they don't either.
The closing of the Rotenberg Gallery on Newbury Street. What does it mean for the future of contemporary art in Boston? Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.